Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
It's Tuesday and time for our Common Health segment, and this week it involves a frank conversation about sex that may not be appropriate for some of our younger listeners. So with that gentle warning, we will proceed. This week, Common Health contributor Aisha Siddiqui wrote about her own decision and her own experience with unprotected sex. Her piece received a lot of feedback online, and Aisha joins us now. Welcome to Radio Boston. Thanks for coming in.
Hi, Anthony. Thanks for having me.
So in your piece, you reveal bravely, I think, because it has prompted a pretty important conversation, that you engaged in unprotected sex, and then you took steps to follow up and understand your decision. So tell us how this all started.
Well, first, before we begin, I want everyone to know that, yes, unprotected sex is risky. And it's funny because I knew of all the risks. I was a public health graduate student. I knew the statistics, and I was studying behavioral sciences. I knew I was putting myself at risk. All that said, I still didn't use a condom.
So a few months after this encounter, you were consumed with worry, with guilt. And what did you learn?
Well, it was a partner that I had had. I wanted to talk to him about, well, we had this unprotected sexual encounter, and, well, what is your sexual history? It was a kind of nerve-wracking conversation, and the window period since our encounter hadn't passed yet, so I had to wait another month or so before I could get tested and know the HIV results would be completely accurate. And so I just wanted to talk with him and ask if he had any high-risk partners. And his response was, well, define high risk. That kind of set me off edge a little bit.
Right. That must have added to your sense of insecurity about this.
It did. It did. But then once I listed IV drug users or people with multiple partners, he allayed my worries.
So, Aisha, in your story, you reached out to Ralph DiClementi. He's a professor of behavioral sciences and health education at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory. And he joins us now. And Professor DiClementi, welcome to Radio Boston.
Well, thank you so much. It's great to be on board.
So I want to ask you, despite all of the knowledge and statistics out there, people still engage in unsafe sex. Why?
Well, people are much more emotional than we'd like to present ourselves. Sex often occurs in a hot space when people have high emotions, they're peaked, they're excited. And as Aisha is pointing out, you can certainly coldly review the statistics and the facts and know you're at risk. But when you get to a hot space, it's very difficult to have those facts have any meaning and influence on your behavior.
So inhibitions and our powers to reason go out the window. So what's the response to this? How should we be thinking about this then?
There are a couple of ways we can think about it. One is, how do we educate folks about sexual health promotion? And it may mean that we have to change our approach a little bit and not only present our information in cold spaces, but also be available to answer questions when people are in a hot space.
And questions like one of the things you talk about is that people really need to initiate a sexual history conversation before they become intimate, right?
They should. It's clearly important. If you went to buy a used car, you would like to know the history of the car. But when we get into a new relationship, for some reason, we avoid asking questions about the history of our partners.
And you give a few reasons as to why this is so difficult. The first idea that is that just having the conversation can create some false presumptions. It's awkward, in other words.
It's very awkward. You've met someone, you're attracted to them, you feel they're attracted to you, but you're not sure. You now raise the issue of, well, in terms of having sex, well, wait a minute, are you presuming that I want to have sex with you? That presumption may not be grounded in reality and could certainly be ego deflating for the individual asking if someone says, well, I really don't want to have sex with you.
Hmm. Aisha, what are you hearing in this? And I'm interested to know how you respond to it. You obviously knew the risks involved. Did your ability to reason simply leave you in that critical moment?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I'm the public health student who's totally prepared. You know, the condoms are an arm's reach away from my bed. I know exactly how to rehearse and what to say in my head. But just as the professor was saying, you're in this hot space, you're attracted, you don't know if the other person really wants to be with you. And actually, that's kind of what happened in this space. And I think it's especially hard for a woman to initiate the sexual history conversation, because then it brings this issue of reputation, as I talk about in the piece, of, well, now you're asking about sex. What do you have? Do you sleep around? Are you loose? Are you promiscuous? These ideas come, and I've seen those looks even among my friends. When a woman brings up sex, there's often the misperception that she's of, you know, quote unquote, loose morals.
Right. Dr. DiClemente, what about that? What about reputation? For example, if a woman carries a condom in her purse, instead of being prepared, some people might view that as promiscuous behavior or suggestive of a history that some men might find unattractive, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I think Aisha is quite on the point. There is definitely a dual standard. If men are carrying condoms, well, that means they want to be safe. If women are carrying condoms, does that mean they're more likely to be promiscuous because they're looking to have sex?
Does this mean that in spite of years and years of cold analytical conversation about the need to engage in safe sex if people are going to be intimate, we still need to have another kind of conversation across our society, it seems, about this issue?
Yeah, it's clear that the conversations we've had have been cold, but unfortunately, sex is hot. And therein lies the problem in a nutshell. We can certainly reason quite logically and very well when we're in a non-engaged, non-emotional situation. But as soon as we switch to that emotional situation, then those cold, hard facts and those cold, hard discussions may have less meaning for us.
And Aisha, you've received a lot of comments online, some of them quite harsh, some of them supportive. Give us a sense of what you heard from your readers.
Yeah, Anthony, there's just been such a range. Everything from one reader, Stephanie, said, you know, how can you not feel comfortable talking about these things when you feel comfortable enough to share your body with someone? All the way to a mother, Nancy, telling me that she loved the piece and it was she was able to talk to her daughter about it. That's kind of the issue, is that there is this duality of attitudes toward sex, and that it's either, what, you're crazy, you're irresponsible, like this is, and then the conversation just shuts down, versus being open to exploring the nuances and the difficulties that actually present themselves.
And Aisha, one last question. Why did you want to write this piece? I mean, I understand how you got in this situation and the way you wanted to follow up, but going public with it, not such a straightforward decision.
Yeah, it isn't. But I went into public health to make a difference. And I hear narratives from my friends, people under 30, that we've all grown up in this age of safe sex. But I know so many people who don't have the conversation, who don't have safe sex. And it's not like it's a routine thing, but it's a very real predicament. And now that I'm actually in a monogamous relationship, a very healthy relationship at that, we're able to have conversations. I really see the value in it. And it just needs to be talked about and in the open, in the clear.
Well, thank you so much for bringing the conversation to us. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Anthony.
That's Aisha Siddiqui. She's a contributor to WBUR's Common Health blog. And Ralph DiClemente, professor of behavioral sciences and health education at the Rollins School of Public Health at Emory. Thank you for joining us, professor.
My pleasure.
There's much more information, including a link to Aisha's article at our website, radioboston.org.
Tomorrow on Radio Boston, cracking down on crime. Beacon Hill lawmakers are on the verge of passing a new 3 strikes and you're outlaw. Critics say it goes too far and will keep too many people locked up for life. A debate about crime and punishment, that's tomorrow on the show.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR with regular contributions from The Angle at boston.com. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.